Hi, this is Kalia from Pandora's Box, and today I'm going to talk to you about the mother wound and attachment theory. Are you often frustrated at the quality of your romantic relationships and wonder why you continue to repeat the same patterns over and over again? Most of you may understand that your patterns begin in early childhood, but today we're going to talk a bit more about just how these patterns form. We all know that our first attachments in life affect the course of our life and relationships. If we were blessed with a loving, caring, and nurturing mother who was happy to be pregnant with us and looked forward to our coming into the world, we will be much more secure in our attachments to others. On the other hand, if we are the result of an unwanted pregnancy, an unhealthy or toxic relationship, if our mother was anxious during her pregnancy with us, and there's a lot of fear about our coming into the world, this will affect the bond that we have with the mother. And if after we're born, our mother was unable to really bond with us, maybe as a result of postpartum depression, her own anxiety, a personality disorder, addictions, mental illness, or any other reason, we are deeply affected by this. Sometimes the mother wound can be very deep, even if we had a mother who loved us and tried her best to be there for us, but life circumstances prevented her from meeting our needs on a consistent basis. This can be abuse from a significant other. It can be illness. It can be having to work because she's a single parent. There can be a lot of different reasons, a death of a significant other, a death of a father. A lot of things like that can really affect that mother's ability to be there for her child. Attachment theory is a product of a study on how children attach to their primary caregivers. Those precious few years of life determine how secure we are in our adult attachments. Our attachment styles are directly related to the type of attachment we had with our mother or primary caregiver. Certain qualities are necessary to form a healthy attachment with mother, including a mother's ability to meet the primary needs of her infant and help that infant to feel loved and secure. If the infant can depend on the mother or primary caregiver to meet its needs on a consistent basis, that infant develops a secure attachment to the mother, and as a result will be much more secure in his or her adult relationships. When we consider infant needs, we're talking about touch or skin-to-skin contact, eye contact, mirroring, breast milk, regular feedings, proper soothing and attention to the infant, and picking up the infant when it's distressed in order to provide it with comfort and reassurance. When an infant can develop trust that his or her primary caregiver will be there to meet its needs on a consistent basis, that trust carries over to adult relationships, and the individual's much more trusting and secure in his or her relationships. However, if the primary caregiver fails to meet the needs of the infant on a consistent basis, the adult attachments become insecure. An individual with an insecure attachment style will have difficulty trusting that a relationship partner will be there for them and will attach to a relationship partner in either an anxious way or an avoidant way or a combination. Those who have what is called an anxious or anxious preoccupied attachment style normally had their childhood needs met, but on a very inconsistent basis. So the child never knew for sure whether mom would be there. And this created a lot of anxiety, which transferred to his or her adult relationships. Those who form an avoidant attachment style did not get their needs met in early childhood. They may not have attached to their mother at all. They might have been given up for adoption or born to an avoidant mother or a mother who had a personality disorder, a mental illness, or addictions, which prevented her from meeting the needs of her child. Now, incubator babies often have issues with attachment because they were not held and breastfed in those initial days and weeks of life. And this, of course, is no fault of the mother, but still can result in difficulty in adult attachment. According to Dr. Judy Rosenberg, the author of Be the Cause, Healing Human Disconnect, the mother is the cause of our attachment wound. Now, this isn't about blaming the mother for all of our problems in life. Our mother inherited her disconnect from her mother, who inherited it from her mother, and so on. So this is an ancestral wound. Rosenberg tells us that in order to develop a healthy psyche, the infant needs that skin-to-skin contact with the mother, that breast milk, that eye contact, and positive mirroring. For the pre-verbal infant, this interaction and feedback is important for the child to feel that it's loved, wanted, and valued. When the infant cries out for attention, it's important that the mother respond to that child in a timely manner. Otherwise, the child becomes anxious, possibly angry, and disconnects from the mother emotionally. Now, the father's role is also very important. So when I talk about the mother wound, we're not letting the father off the hook here. Rosenberg says that the father's role is to nurture the mother, to help fill her energy reserves so that she can be more available to the child. How many absent fathers are there in the world? How many of you felt your father nurtured your mother when you were young? We develop these beliefs that the nurturing role fall entirely upon the woman, and the father's job is just to be the breadwinner or take care of the physical heavy lifting. We don't often think of the father's nurturing role as being that important. However, if the father is absent, either physically or emotionally, the mother can become very depleted energetically and just not have enough emotional energy to give to her baby. I was a single mom, and from the time my son was born, I left his father when I was 5 months pregnant. So I had to be both mother and father, breadwinner and nurturer. And I did the best I could, but I know that I fell short. And as mothers, we have to acknowledge that we may have also contributed to the mother wound in our own children. It's not that we didn't love our babies, but we may not have had the energy reserves to be there for our children on a consistent basis. All of our adult psychological issues have a mother wound at the core. This is our core wound and becomes our core beliefs about who we are. As a result of our disconnect with mother, we feel disconnected with our adult partners in life to some degree. The depth of our disconnect in early childhood determines the depth of our disconnect in adulthood. Personality disorders, mental health issues, addictions, codependency, and even some physical issues are the result of the infant-mother disconnect. Rosenberg tells us that personality disorders such as narcissistic personality disorder and borderline personality disorder are directly related to the infant-mother disconnect. So for those wondering how a narcissistic partner developed their narcissism, this is your answer. Narcissists are found to have either an anxious or avoidant attachment style. And in my experience, I would say that narcissists are mostly avoidant in their attachments, and borderline personalities are mostly anxious in their attachments. When we think about an avoidant attachment, we may think that the individual with an avoidant attachment simply avoids commitment or doesn't get involved with others at all, but this is not the case. Avoidance can avoid commitment for sure, but mostly they avoid emotional attachment. They may attach to others on a physical level, but they don't bond on an emotional level. Most of us who have been involved with a narcissist realize somewhere in that relationship, oftentimes it's at the end, that the narcissist wasn't really attached to us. They didn't really bond to us emotionally, so they could detach from us very easily. And this is hugely anxiety provoking to someone with an anxious attachment style. Most people involved with a narcissist say at the end of their relationship, it was all a lie. I believed it was a real relationship, but it was all a lie. And what they're really saying is, he or she didn't have a real bond with me. I believed we were both emotionally invested in the relationship, but I realized I was the only one who bonded on an emotional level. And this makes a person feel really cheated that they've done all this investing emotionally and the other person isn't invested at all. And of course, this awareness is deeply triggering to the anxiety of the anxious attachment style. Studies show us that it's very common that the anxious and the avoidant will partner with each other because the secure attachments are usually already in long-term relationships. The adult single scene, especially in older adults, are mostly comprised of anxious and avoidant styles. There's another attachment style called disorganized or ambivalent, and this is a combination of both anxious and avoidant, and one may swing between the two. These personality types may have a come-here-go-away style of relating, which is common with borderline personalities. Now, let me be really clear that having an anxious or avoidant attachment style does not make you personality disordered. Studies show that about 50% of all adults are either anxious or avoidant in their attachment style, and the other 50% have a secure attachment style. Although the majority of my clients who are coming out of narcissistic environments identify with the anxious attachment style, many feel that at times they're also avoidant. And I can relate to a tendency to be avoidant as well, because when I don't feel that my needs are being met in a relationship, I often take a big step back. And that step back is usually in the spirit of reevaluating the relationship and also tending to my own wounds and my own anxiety. When I took a survey to determine my attachment style, I came up as an anxious, preoccupied attachment style. Ironically, I discovered that this attachment style can become quite preoccupied with their relationships and getting their needs met. And this comes from not getting our needs met on a consistent basis as a child. This style seeks that consistency, but seldom finds it, especially if we are partnering with avoidant attachment styles. According to Dr. Judy Rosenberg, we transfer our anger and our pain from our initial childhood wound onto our adult relationships, quite unconsciously. We often believe our anxiety is the result of the current relationship, but the current relationship is more likely triggering the original wound. In the relationship between the anxious and avoidant, the anxious attachment style is the one who suffers the most. The avoidant doesn't suffer from the same level of anxiety because he or she cut off from the parent emotionally at such a young age. With the avoidant's needs not being met as an infant and a young child, he or she gave up on getting what he or she needed and threw his or her rage and anger at his parents for not being there, just cut off emotionally. That rage and anger is still there beneath the surface of his awareness and is often transferred to his adult relationships, either aggressively or passive aggressively. If you're someone who is doing a lot of work on yourself and you're trying to heal your core wounds, it's important to understand the initial cause of the wound, which is your infant bond with mother, and also understand your resulting attachment style. Studies show that we can upgrade to a secure attachment style under the right circumstances, such as having a long-term relationship with a person who has a secure attachment style. But if, as an anxious style, we're consistently getting involved with an avoidant attachment style, we may live in a constant state of anxiety when we're in relationships. When I did my test to determine my attachment style, I found out that I have a secure attachment with my friends, with my social group, and an insecure attachment with my romantic partners. This means I know what it feels like to have a secure attachment and need to just avoid getting involved with avoidance. Avoid the avoidance if you're a anxious attachment style. There is the question of what happens when two avoidance or two anxious styles get together. Well, the attraction factor often prevents this combination because we're attracted to opposites, not sames. But I do have a close friend who is an anxious style married to another anxious style. They both basically have fear of abandonment and are both anxious in the way that they relate. And they're doing really well. They're having an amazing relationship. And the reason that they're doing well is that both of them are really open with each other about their insecurities, and they nurture and care for each other. And the relationship has become quite secure as a result of their mutual commitment to nurturing each other on a consistent basis. And this can happen with two anxious styles who are aware enough to do the work. You know, it's a lot of you might be thinking, wow, well, I tried to have that conversation with the person I was with and they used it against me and made me feel worse. You're usually talking about a narcissist who is going to use your vulnerability to manipulate you, to control you, to make you feel bad about yourself. But when you're in a relationship with somebody who is not narcissistic and who is able to truly be there for you, it can be very healing. When an anxious style mates with an avoidant, the avoidant simply may not be capable of being there for the anxious person on a consistent basis because nobody was there for them at all. It's not their fault, but they tend to be more self-focused rather than committing to caring for and nurturing the other. It doesn't mean that an avoidant style cannot be working on himself or herself and have a willingness to commit to healing and being there for the other. This is entirely possible too, but it really depends on the person and their level of awareness and commitment to healing. The key to healing always comes back to self-love. We need to learn to care for and nurture ourselves on a consistent basis, and through attention to self, heal our core wounds of shame and unworthiness. As we heal on deeper and deeper levels, we begin to feel somewhat repulsed by those who can't be there for us. We simply don't want that dynamic anymore, and eventually we aren't even attracted to it, or we don't stay there. When the avoidant element surfaces in our relationships and our attempts to discuss the issue with a partner fails to be fruitful, one who's recovering from childhood core wounds may end the relationship not out of avoidance but out of self-love. Now, an avoidant can also recover. Like I say, just because you're anxious or avoidant doesn't make you a narcissist or a borderline. All avoidants are not narcissists, but the avoidant needs to do some serious recovery work as well and understand the primal wound, express his rage and anger at the original cause, and release his pain and anguish of not getting his needs met as a child. He then needs to find someone who he feels safe forming a true bond with and be very open and honest about his fears, insecurities, and mistrust. When we find a partner we can truly be ourselves with, communicate openly and honestly with, and hold a safe space of healing for each other, we can both evolve and heal our relationship wounds. Sometimes it's difficult to heal a relationship wound when we're not actually in a relationship, because the wound is not triggered when we're not in a relationship, unless we're just coming out of one, of course. However, it's difficult to heal the relationship wound when we're in an unsafe relationship where our wounds are being used against us to control and manipulate us. We can do some major healing work in therapy, however, and a lot of people go into therapy after a relationship ends that was really painful, disappointing, and it brings all our issues to the surface so that they can start working through those issues. But we do need to have a therapist who fully understands narcissistic personality disorder, if you've experienced that, and that understands attachment styles for the greatest progress. Most of the people I work with have some codependency and would happily take on the task of working with a romantic partner who sincerely wants to heal in their relationships. The issue is that many codependents mate with those who are not committed to healing their relationship wounds and instead project them onto their partners and blame them for the issues in the relationship. As a recovering codependent, it's important to bring the focus back to yourself, focusing on your own healing and not focusing on what the partner needs to fix or heal. In order for healing to happen, it takes two people who are fully committed to doing the work. And I'm talking about in a relationship, not when you're out of a relationship. So this means walking into their own pain and discomfort and holding space for the other to walk into their pain and discomfort. But our first commitment needs to be to ourselves and our own healing. And if we're in a relationship, our second commitment to holding the space for a romantic partner who is committed to his or her own healing. If we don't have such a partner, letting go of the relationship with someone who is consistently provoking your anxiety will likely bring you much greater peace. If you are interested in taking the same test that I took to determine your attachment style, I will put the link below. And I hope this has been really helpful for you. I want to thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time.